welcome to Outsources. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry. Tonight's show is about Out Boulder County's Gay Alcoholics Anonymous meeting. I've been interested in reaching out to this group for quite a few months now, as I wanted to learn more about how this group makes AA more accessible to LGBTQ folks and serves our community. When all in-person meetings in Out Boulder were taken online to help reduce the spread of COVID-19, many people on social media, in the news, and otherwise began talking about isolation and addiction recovery. I finally reached out to the facilitators of Boulder's gay AA group, and they very kindly answered my questions. The facilitators gave me more general responses and included quotes from individual members. In keeping with the practice of total anonymity, I asked other members of Outsources, as well as a friend and my partner, to record themselves reading the quotes from individual members of AA. So thank you to Joel, Karen, Sean, Anna, Harper, and Jenna for helping me with tonight's show. If you would like to find out more information about the Gay AA group in Boulder, please reach out to aagaymeetingboulder@gmail.com. Now on to my questions. What does a typical Gay AA meeting look like? The meeting is usually held at Out Boulder, which is visibly queer and welcoming. It's in the evening, and a greeter or two waits outside the door to say hello and make sure people who attend feel welcomed. The room is lined with chairs and a couple of couches, coffee and tea are ready, and people are chatting. Every meeting, the preamble is read, reminding us we are all there for a common purpose. Members share at random for a few minutes each until the end of the meeting. Afterward, anyone who wants to hangs out and talks, catching up on life, talking to newcomers, and generally being there. This is an important time for helping people feel welcome and answering questions and helping people stay sober. Right now, we have home group members who open the Zoom meeting and read the format. We have someone who has signed up on a calendar who speaks about a topic of their choice related to alcoholism or shares their personal story. Then we open it up for members to share. We pause in the middle to make AA-related announcements, pass the basket, and celebrate sobriety birthdays. Meetings open and close with a prayer, typically the Serenity Prayer, and they last for an hour. It is a very large and lively group of diverse folks, typically 12 to 30 people. There is a sense of welcoming and camaraderie of strong and impactful sobriety stories. There is a mixture of joy and excitement and stillness and hardship as this space holds a variety of experiences. Our group has a very strong message around sobriety and what life is like past putting the plug in the jug. What issues and challenges do gay AA members encounter differently than their cisgender and heterosexual counterparts? Alcoholism is universal in the way that it affects us all. It's the inability to control one's drinking and decide when it's time to stop. One member writes,
"Honestly, we're all alcoholics. Even though queerness is one aspect of my story, the longer I'm in AA, the longer I realize there are more similarities than differences."
However, when it comes to the literature of AA, it can be hard to find mentions of our identities. Our main text was written in 1935 and uses outdated language, like he as a universal for any person, for instance, and has been purposely unchanged to maintain its original message from the author. Some members of the Gay AA meeting have also noted discomfort going to non-queer-specific meetings if they are in the process of a name change. The Gay meeting was started for exactly such reasons, to make sure that there is a safe space for queer people to come and learn about AA without fear of other potential threats. How do you queer the more traditional aspects of AA? We are queers, so our AA is queer. We uphold the guiding principles or traditions of AA for the sake of unity, which is more important than individual sobriety. But every group is also autonomous and functions as they wish best serve their group. We choose not to hold our meeting in a church since many LGBTQIA plus folks have religious trauma of some sort. When we read the AA preamble at the start of the meeting, we say people instead of men and women, as it is written. And once we meet in person again, we'll paste the word God over the word him on the 12 steps banner we hang. We also oftentimes change the word God to higher power in our prayers. Every sponsorship experience is autonomous as well. One member shares,
"When I first went through the steps, I had a trans sponsor who read the big book with gender-neutral pronouns. This was a lifesaver for me and a reassurance that anyone can work this program regardless of background."
Do you have any stories you'd like to share about the impact of an LGBTQ plus AA space? There are so many. First of all, its founding. The Gay AA meeting was started by two trans-identifying sober members of Alcoholics Anonymous who had both worked a program of recovery in the rooms of AA in Boulder, but craved a queer-specific space. We since then have had multiple members come to our meeting as their first AA meeting and their only comfortable, safe step onto the road of recovery and sobriety. We constantly hear in meetings, "I love this meeting. This meeting is so special to me, and I really needed this queer space." Here are some personal stories.
"I didn't feel comfortable in a lot of my first meetings because they were aggressively masc and cis. The people in these meetings were never hostile towards me, but I didn't feel comfortable being myself and opening up about what was going on with me and my sobriety. I also felt that religious persecution has always been a barrier for queer people like me, and that an organization like AA that has such a Christian vibe to it, that it might not be welcoming towards people like me. When I found the queer AA space, I saw how AA could be interpreted through any lens, and that the religious aspect of it was due more to the era the program was conceived in and had nothing to do with the overall structure of the program. Not only did I feel safe as a non-binary person in recovery when I found queer AA meetings, but I was also able to connect with a fellowship that I closely identified with. It can be a lifesaver during those first initial meetings when you're still trying to figure out if this is the right solution for you."
"I got sober in a different state and went to queer meetings there, but when I moved back to Boulder and came to this meeting, it felt too intimate, too close to home, you know? In New York City, where I got sober, there is a level of anonymity because it's such a big city and there are so many meetings. But here, I knew many folks and they knew me. So that creates a deep vulnerability that is scary. As years have gone on, however, I cherish this meeting. There are so many folks who have come through who have said they really aren't sure they would have gotten sober if not for this meeting. That is huge, you know? Sometimes people don't understand the importance of not having meetings in churches and not having prayers on the wall, things like that. But not having these things is really important for our specific group and the people who attend."
How have COVID-19 and isolation impacted the way you operate AA? Everything is virtual. We made a decision to move to Zoom if necessary, but meet in person with lots of hand sanitizer until forced to. Then just days later, OBC closed our doors to in-person meetings. So thankfully we were ready, but we had to adjust our format a little. We usually hand out chips that have numbers signifying someone's sobriety count, and that looks different. We like to get food after meetings, and that's no longer happening. But we now get to meet twice a week because of the flexibility and availability of Zoom. It can be a challenge to meet with newcomers. The impact of having a person there with you when you're new cannot be overstated, and it's been difficult to connect the same way during the lockdown. It has been a welcome challenge at the same time because it's moments like the one we're living in now that allow us to examine what is and isn't working and gives us an awareness to improve any weak areas. AA was designed to help anyone get sober in any situation through a connection to a higher power. One member shares,
"The tools we learn in AA help us navigate isolation. So it was reaffirming for me to experience this and grow stronger as a result. Normally, we have a very strong fellowship and sense of community in physical spaces, at meetings and sober fun activities. Not having those normal routines and quality time has been tough."
But everything has been replaced by Zoom, phone calls, and FaceTime, so many of us have adapted to the current circumstances, it seems. We continue to do our service roles, handing out chips, participating in a business meeting, etc., as much as possible virtually, but it's really not the same. You're listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and today I'm reading some responses from the gay AA group at Boulder County. We've been talking about how the group queers the AA space, makes it more accessible to LGBTQ folks, and how they've been coping with the COVID-19 crisis. I reached out to the facilitators of Boulder's AA group, and they answered my questions in the form of a Google document. The facilitator gave me more general responses and also included quotes from individual members. In keeping with the practice of total anonymity, I asked other members of Outsources, as well as my friend and partner, to record themselves reading the quotes from individual members of AA. So thank you to everyone who's helped me record the show. Thank you to Joel, Karen, Sean, Anna, Harper, and Jenna for helping me with tonight's show. If you'd like more information about the Gay AA group in Boulder, please reach out to aagaymeetingboulder@gmail.com. Now back to my questions. What challenges have arisen for members in the last 6 weeks? We were luckily able to begin operating over Zoom entirely pretty quickly. We never had to cancel a meeting, and our members are able to meet regularly still. Some of our members are students, some are no longer working. What member shares?
For myself, I had a scare that my sister was ill, so I flew out of state to be with her. It was really lucky that the gay meeting was meeting remotely, so I can still join. Every day, I still ask my higher power for help staying sober. And every day, I am sober. I'd say the most challenging thing I've faced since COVID is a resurgence of depression, though not too bad, and working on the challenging eighth step.
Isolation is a key struggle for any in recovery. Addiction thrives on isolation, and so much of what we talk about in AA is creating connections with other folks. So having to physically stay away from people and meetings has been hard for a lot of people. On the other hand, there have always been phone meetings for people who can't, for many reasons, attend in-person meetings. In many ways, it actually makes our meeting, and other meetings as well, more available to more people across the world. But not being able to hug or hang around casually before or after a meeting is definitely a bummer. Though Zoom has been miraculously helpful, it cannot make up for the real thing. What are some stories of members encountering unexpected support since social distancing began?
During lockdown, a lot of folks have been laid off or furloughed. A lot of folks, me included, have had trouble coping with the anxiety and the fear of getting sick. But so many people have so much time on their hands now. I personally have felt more connected to people in AA because we have more time to reach out and check in. I would attend daily check-ins with people in the morning and spend more time reaching out.
I got sober in NYC. Since COVID, I've been able to attend my old home group and other NYC AA meetings, and I've seen someone I used to drink with in a trans meeting. That was super cool and super shocking. But it's so beautiful to see people who we drank with come into the meetings because alcoholism is scary. I also went to a local meeting on Zoom with another trans person who was speaking, who I met in my first 90 days of sobriety. I hadn't seen him in like 4 years. So that was really cool to see these folks and connect.
People have been super supportive. I lost a source of income and community, and a local nonprofit helped me get through with gifts and assistance. My fellow alcoholics are still there, and I've actually talked more with people than before, in some cases, because we are all in this together. So, if I'm having a hard time, it's my job to call another alcoholic and be of service.
How can friends and loved ones of AA members better support you all during the COVID-19 crisis?
Give me my space during meetings. It's harder online to treat a meeting the same way when you're physically there. I can't do dishes. I can't answer your question about the dog while I'm in a meeting. Treat it like I'm not there. Another idea, suggest healthy coping mechanisms, like take a walk, call a friend rather than have a drink.
There's been humor around the quarantine that we need alcohol to cope, but many of us are doing it sober and need reminders that it can be done without drinking. continue to do what makes us feel loved. Reach out, provide phone support, the things we generally do with our loved ones in relationships, you know? It's not that different. We need to know the specific things each person we are in relationship with needs, and that is different for every person and for every reason. One of us might need things due to alcoholism, or a different loved one might need things to support them through PTSD struggles, mental health, etc. Support our sobriety, our identity, and make your friends and loved ones feel loved. That is a strong foundation for any of us to have, to know that we are cared for and that people are cheering on our lives. As well as that our sobriety and our queer identity are not obstacles in our individual relationships. That's it for my questions and the responses from the Gay AA group at Out Boulder. I'd like to finish tonight's show with some audio from a clip, a video by Riley J. Dennis, her video called Why We Need Alcohol-Free Queer Spaces. In this video, Riley speaks from the perspective of someone who chooses not to drink regardless of addiction, and she considers the impact that having predominantly alcohol-based queer spaces like bars and nightclubs impacts LGBT people in recovery.
When you think of queer community spaces, what do you think of? Probably gay bars, I'm guessing. And there's good reason for that. There are quite a lot of gay bars in cities around the world, and they've played an important role in shaping queer communities over the last few decades. But I think we need something different now. Not to replace gay bars, but to live alongside them as another option for queer people. Because for all the good the gay bars have done and continue to do for some people, they can't be the end-all be-all of our community spaces. I mean, for one, gay bars are often mainly focused on catering to cis gay men. And while that's nice for them, lots of queer people are not cis gay men. And we'd like a place that caters to us as well. Plus, while some queer folks thrive in loud, hectic environments late at night, lots of us just don't feel comfortable in the bar club scene or can't even cope with all that stimulation. But in addition to all of that, there's another big reason we need something other than gay bars and clubs. Alcohol. Now look, this isn't like an anti-alcohol tirade or anything, don't worry. I know lots of people love alcohol and can drink responsibly and all of that. But I think it's super important for our community that we have the option to go to safe social areas where drinking isn't expected of us. Obviously, I'm a little biased here because I don't drink alcohol, but I'm not alone in that. Lots and lots of queer folks don't drink, and so when all of our social situations revolve around alcohol, it can be really isolating for us. We either have to turn down invitations because we don't want to drink, or go and probably be pressured to drink. And I don't just mean being pressured to drink by our friends, because really, if your friends are pressuring you to drink in the first place, they're not very good friends. But also, I just mean that the bar club scene itself obviously encourages drinking. The atmosphere pressures you to drink. The whole venue is set up so that you spend money on alcohol. Most everyone there drinks, so even if they don't directly pressure you, there can still be a pressure to just fit in and drink like everyone else. So you're basically choosing between missing out on social events or going and feeling like an outsider anyway. And obviously, there are exceptions to this. Like, I have gone out with my friends and not drank and had a good time. It is possible to go to a bar or club and not drink and still have a good time. But it's not the norm. That place isn't catering to you. It's catering to people who drink. It's one thing to try and exist in a place that's not built for you. It's another to exist in a place specifically built for people like you. I mean, that's what gay bars were made for in the first place. Queer people were violently excluded from spaces made for cishet people. So they made their own places. Places that were built for them and their needs, so they could feel comfortable and not like an outsider just trying to fit in. But now it's clear that even in those places, those gay bars, a bunch of queer people still feel like outsiders, just for different reasons. Now it's not because they're queer, but because they don't drink or something like that. So I think it's important to realize that while gay bars have served tons of people really well, they've also excluded a whole bunch of us. And while that can be irritating for people like me who choose not to drink, it can be devastating for people who have addiction problems with alcohol. Like, the bar club atmosphere encourages you to drink. And for some people, that's not a problem. It's easy for me to say no to a drink because I don't have problems with addiction. But for alcoholics, it's not as simple as just say no to a drink. Addiction is never that simple. What's a mildly annoying social pressure to me is a super powerful addiction-driven pressure to an alcoholic. Every time they're offered a drink or in an environment that encourages drinking, it's another opportunity for them to relapse. The more they're around that, the more they're likely to relapse. But if knowing that, they remove themselves from that situation, they end up isolating themselves even more. And social isolation can also lead to relapsing. So it's a lose-lose situation for recovering alcoholics in the queer community. You either go out with your friends and have to constantly fight your addictive urges throughout the night, or you don't go out with your friends, which could make you isolated and depressed, which could then lead to an increase in your addictive urge to drink. The fact that the queer social scene so commonly revolves around alcohol isn't only annoying or inconvenient or inaccessible, it can be life-ruining for some people. Alcoholism is no joke, and it's a problem in queer communities because of our reliance on bars and clubs. It's because of all of that that we need social spaces that don't revolve around alcohol. Queer people need a safe place to be themselves, and bars can't do that for all of us. We need things like cafes, community centers, libraries, bookstores, and other sorts of communal areas. Having a place to meet up and connect with other queer people is so vitally important to our community, and places like these provide that for queer folks who don't want to go to gay bars. I mean, they even provide that for queer folks who also want to go to gay bars. There's no reason they need to be mutually exclusive. What we really need is different kinds of community spaces coexisting so that people can go wherever they're most comfortable. And these places aren't just going to pop up out of nowhere. If you're queer and don't have these spaces around you, think about making them. I know it can be expensive and difficult to run something like that, so I'm not saying that you need to, but if you have the means, I'm sure your local queer community would absolutely love it. In fact, just last year, a couple of folks opened up a queer coffee shop in LA called Cuties. This video is not sponsored by them, I just absolutely love Cuties. I went there all the time when I lived in LA, and it's exactly the kind of community space that we need. It's a place where you can go during the day and be comfortable, a kind of home away from home. They also hold all sorts of events after hours and often let other groups host stuff there. It's just the inclusive, community-oriented kind of place that the queer community in LA was sorely lacking before then. So if you're in LA, please check them out. I'll link their info in the description. But also, regardless of where you're located, if you'd like to support Cuties, I'll link their Patreon down below. They're currently trying to raise money in an effort to stay open, and I just love this place so much, it would break my heart to see them close down. So please, if you can, support them on Patreon. They're even offering some cool perks, depending on what level you support them at. And especially if you're not queer, this would be a great way to directly financially support queer people and have an impact in our community. Queer folks are more likely than cishet folks to have money, employment, and housing problems. So projects like these require the support of non-queer people too. Anyway, regardless of whether you're queer or not, please check out Cuties Patreon linked in the description and consider helping them out. And if you have your own local queer spaces that aren't based around alcohol, please support them as well. Or even start your own. This is something we really need, not just in LA, but everywhere. Alcohol-free queer spaces can be life-changing for people, and we desperately need more of them.
You've been listening to Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins. I'm your host, Yvonne Crumry, and today's show is a little different. Earlier this spring, I reached out to the facilitators of the Gay AA group at Out Boulder County regarding some questions I had about how they operated and how they were operating during the COVID-19 crisis. The facilitators put together some responses from the more general group as well as individual members. And I read part of that. I had the other members of Outsources read part of these answers as well as some friends. So thank you again to Joel, Karen, Anna, Sean, Jenna, and Harper for helping me with this show. If anyone is interested in hearing more about Out Boulder's Gay AA meeting, please email aagaymeetingboulder@gmail.com and connect with the facilitators of this group. You can also learn more about resources for LGBT folks on the path to sobriety by following some links in the show description on kgnu.org/outsources. As always, that link is also where you can find all of our past shows, as well as this show after it's been aired. Also check out our news blog at news.kgnu.org/outsources. And as every week, please tune in next week at Monday at 6:30 for another episode of Outsources on KGNU, Boulder, Denver, and Fort Collins.